Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
With a little love and some tenderness, we'll walk upon the water, we'll rise above the mist. With a little peace and some harmony, we'll take the world together, we'll take them by the hand. 'Cause I got him for you.
Time to take a drive around the SEC.
Brought to you by Love Chevy. Act now for spectacular savings on the best selection of new Chevys. I-26 at Harbison and at lovechevy.com. Together, let's drive.
Yeah, let's hop on in. It's time for the Love Chevy Drive Around the SEC, presented by our great friends over there at Love Chevy. Big fans of the program, been big friends of ours. We love to love, and we love to love Love Chevy. Ben Hoover and the gang over there, home of the $1,000 low price guarantee. You also have lovechevy.com. You can shop all the inventory, new and used. Because, again, it's not just Columbia people that love Chevy. People throughout the state of South Carolina do. We welcome you to come on and check them out and make sure you make the right call on where you're going to get that new Chevy. Okay, I'm going heavy football and a good amount of nerdy baseball. Dealer's choice, Jamie. I think you're going to like some of the nerdiness that I brought to the table on baseball. But what would you like first?
Golf. Oh, sorry. Football.
Not a choice. Football. Okay. Football, football, football. Well, let's start with this on football. I mentioned the spring game for Texas. Arch Manning stealing the show for the Longhorns. They call it the orange and white game because that's their colors, you know. Three touchdowns. Lit it up. Quinn Ewers barely played, obviously. He wanted Arch to kind of let him cook. Three touchdowns, 355 yards, throwing the football, including two separate 75-yard touchdown throws. So you said, Phil, we do have the cold cut ready?
So this yes, is
something,
I do.
This is something that kind of relates indirectly to Texas, but more often, more so on why I think you're going to see the demise of spring football games. Just another thing that, and he kind of, Cole gives credit to this to Greg McElroy, his talk show partner back in Birmingham. I hadn't thought of this really, but it's an interesting takeaway. Go ahead and play the cut from Cole.
Just how calculated he is. I don't believe that this was just fun and games. Now, obviously, the things that they did were tug of war dunk contests, hot dog eating contests. It was great. You got some buzz for the school. You got some buzz for the program. You showed your players it's a fun environment. Guys want to stick around. Guys want to be a part of that. Great. Awesome. Cool. I think that there's another portion of this. And I'll give McElroy some credit, kind of steal this idea from him a little bit. But once he said it, I was like, yeah, absolutely. Let's go back to Texas last year. What happened to their spring game? You got a backup quarterback ball out, Malik Murphy. People started peeing their pants, wanted him to be a part of their team. What did Texas have to do? Up the ante on the NIL just to keep him and hang on to him. And then obviously still probably knew you were going to lose him one day, and eventually they do. I think a lot of this is hiding your talent and not letting a second string receiver or third string running back or second string edge defender or quarterback go out there and make a bunch of plays. All of a sudden somebody sees it and says, that kid could help us. What if we gave him this? And then you get him and he comes in. He wants to leave. I think this is hiding your players, hiding your talent to an extent to say, one, we don't want to put a depth chart out there, have a guy go out there, run second, third, fourth, string reps and get upset and leave. Two, we don't want other people to see those guys to where they may go make them an offer. And if somebody's been having a good spring, we're trying to keep as much of that in-house as we can. So it's absolutely brilliant.
Thank you, Cole. I thought that was really interesting. And honestly, it's not something I thought of. I can think of a million other reasons why coaches have told me they're not putting a whole lot in the spring games. That's a new one. And then the more you think about it with the portal period ridiculously going on right after spring football, it's not that utterly surprising that you might hide players. You might go ahead and do that. That was Cole Kubik again from the SEC Network. I've known Cole for a long amount of time. I've worked with him a bunch, and I think he does good work over there on the radio show as well. Speaking of Ole Miss, Henry Parrish is back in Oxford. He was there back in 2020, 2021. Then he went to Miami. Now he's back at Ole Miss to add to that running back stable, which includes former LSU running back Logan Diggs, New Mexico running back Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt, who led the Lobos with 1,190 yards and 17 touchdowns. And, of course, Parrish, who certainly put up good numbers and good productivity down in Coral Gables. So they just continue. It's at the point now where if Lane Kiffin is in your town or if he's calling somebody in your area code, be careful. You might get your player poached within your own conference very often. They continue to just lead the world in portal power as they pick up yet another addition vis-a-vis the portal. NFL draft. Okay, you know this is going to be going on in a little more than 48 hours. Day one will be on Thursday night. A couple of things I was thinking about. I was talking about this on Friday. I was with Chuck Oliver on the Chuck and Chernoff show. For 4 hours, we were talking a lot of NFL draft. Obviously, the Falcons are a big concern there. But think about this. 2021, just 3 years ago, that was considered one of the best quarterback drafts. You had a ton of guys taken in the first three rounds. Where are they now? Well, Trevor Lawrence is still playing in Jacksonville. He's been good. I don't think he has been the generational quarterback that people thought he would be coming out of Clemson. Still early, still time, but every now and then he has problems with fumbles and just doesn't look like a next level guy. The other four quarterbacks selected in the first round. Well, Mr. Wilson just got traded from the Jets, right? That for a bag of chips and spare parts. Some would argue nobody can do well with the Jets in that particular climate, and obviously he didn't, so he's gone. Trey Lance, he was the number three pick. Again, never worked out. Justin Fields, number 11, he's been dealt. Mac Jones, number 15, he's been dealt. So after Trevor Lawrence, Wilson, Lance, Fields, Jones, all have been spotty at best and all have been traded. My point is there's going to be as many as six first-rounders in this year's draft. At least half of those, the math will tell you, are going to be busts. They're not going to work out. Now, who those six are going to be, I don't know, but they never all work out. This is not 1983, and even 1983 had Todd Blackledge and Tony Eason, but that had Dan Marino, and that had John Elway. More often than not, they look more like Tony Eason and Todd Blackledge. I think Ken O'Brien was in that class, too. Okay, I thought this would be a fun exercise. Top SEC guys that are going to go the highest at each position in the draft. All right, you want your quarterback, you got Jalen Daniels. He's probably going to be the number two pick in the draft. How about your wide receiving core? Well, you got plenty of SEC guys. Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas, top 15 guys, a lock. Then you've got McConkey, you've got Pearsall of Florida, and you've got Leggett. They're all going to be anywhere between late first round and mid second round. So you got plenty of options there. How about your tight end? Well, Brock Bowers, to me, might be the surest bet in this draft. He's going to be top 10. Your running backs, you got Jonathan Brooks, second rounder out of Texas. You got Jalen Wright, third rounder out of Tennessee. O-line, J.C. Latham, I'm going to give you a whole five line. J.C. Latham of Bama, first round. Amarius Mims of Georgia, first round. Tyler Guyton of Oklahoma, second round. Cedric Van Brand, center, Georgia, third round. Christian Jones, Texas, fifth round. Walter Rouse, Oklahoma, sixth round. Let's go to the other side of the ball. Stout D-line. Well, the SEC never has a shortage of those, do they? Byron Murphy, Texas, top 15. Dallas Turner, Bama, top 10. Darius Robinson, Missouri, second round. Devondre Sweat, the Human Eclipse, second round from Texas. Want to play a little goal line? We'll bring in a fifth guy. How about Mason Smith of LSU, 6'6", 320? He's expected to go no later than the third round. Now, linebackers are the closest thing to running backs in the NFL in terms of being devalued. Doesn't mean they're not great, but teams are very reluctant to take a... Remember when middle linebacker defined your defense? That middle linebacker was everything, and you spent a top 10 pick on a tough and gritty middle line. Not anymore. Top SEC linebacker, Edgar and Cooper, A&M, second round. Trevin Wallace, Kentucky, fifth round. Tyron Hopper, Missouri, sixth round. Those are your highest rated SEC linebackers. Cornerbacks, however, different story. Oh, we're opening up the checkbook for defensive backs now. And the SEC is loaded there, too. Terrion Murphy, Alabama first rounder. Kool-Aid McKinstry, Alabama first rounder. Ennis Rakestraw, Missouri second rounder. Javon Bullard, safety, Missouri second round. See all the Missouri guys I'm naming? They're all gone, folks. We need a nickel back. We got a five wide. Look, I need a nickel. Kamari Laskins from Georgia, second round. So there you have it. Oh, well, what is in common with all those guys? You see a lot of Bama, Georgia, Texas, LSU, even though they had a down year last year, and Missouri having one of their best years in the history of the program. And then what's missing on this list? A lot of guys that were on bad teams last year, for being honest.
Mm-hmm.
No, just Great. Thought that'd be interesting. All right, let's get nerdy. College baseball, Jamie, you mentioned it, top 25. You got A&M 1, Arkansas 2, Tennessee 3, Kentucky 4, Vandy 11, Bama 23, Georgia 20, Bama 23, Carolina 24. Caglione went 9 straight games with a home run. That's a Division I record. So 8 of the top 25 teams from the SEC. Charlie Condon is now up to 26 home runs. But don't even just go there. Craig mentioned his batting average. Look at his slugging and OPS. We've never seen numbers like that. And I've covered a lot of great college baseball players and a lot of great ones out of the SEC. What he's doing is just beyond human. It's superhuman what he is doing. And again, might play his way into being the number one pick in the upcoming draft in June. All right, now I get nerdy. You noticed all the home runs? We all love home runs. Jamie, you like home runs, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
Were you a power hitter? I'm. You're more of a gap-to-gap guy, I'm thinking.
I think I hit 8 career home runs. Yeah.
Okay. That's not 8? Bad.
Yeah. 8.
That's not bad.
Not many.
So this year is a lot like last year, and the numbers they're not final, but they're on par of last year. Last year, teams averaged 1.13 home runs per game, which set an all-time NCAA record. That smashed the previous all-time record of 1.08 set in 98. That's when you had the minus 5 bats, and it was gorilla ball. It wasn't even a fair fight. Quite frankly, it was not a great product. So what do? They deaden the bats back in 2011. We went to the BB core, and then what do? We overcorrected. We went to 0.52 home runs a game. It was also not a great product. It was just like ridiculous. So then we finally found our sweet spot, or did we? Because we now are at the point where, and Kendall Rogers has a whole piece on this, does a really good job of covering the sport. The exit velo in college baseball is 5 miles per hour faster than it is in college. Now, I'm not talking the median. So for the light hitting shortstop in college ball is not going to hit as hard as the light hitting shortstop in the bigs. But I'm talking the best of the best. Like if you take the top 50, the top 100, exit velos, and I realize this is a nerdy new term, and Jamie, I know you're well aware of what I'm discussing here. You're now getting exit velos in the college game routinely over 114, and in some cases above 120. That's 5 degrees more than what you have in the college game. So is the offense all of a sudden that much better than all these first-round draft pick arms that we see in a conference like the SEC? No. There's two theories going on. The bats are hot and the balls are juiced. Mm-hmm. And I've talked to more than a couple of pitching coaches that believe both are in play and both need to be fixed. Again, love home runs, but it is at a historic rate. And the pitching has never been better top to bottom in college baseball. It just hasn't. But you got guys that are hitting the ball way harder than they ever have before, and in many cases way farther than they ever have done before. Something to keep an eye on as they continue to calibrate and try to figure things out and make the game as true as it can be. God forbid you had a 120-mile-an-hour line drive hit a kid in the head and cause some serious injury or even a fatality. That'll change everybody's tune real quick. But even short of that, just based on keeping the games fair and on the level, it's going to be something I think is going to be looked at sooner rather than later. And that is our Love Chevy award-winning drive around the SEC. Maestro, take it away.
Brought to you by Love Chevy, where the inventory is overflowing and the deals are in full bloom. I-26 at Harbison and at lovechevy.com. Together, let's drive.
All right, so accompany all that bat and ball talk with how apparently constricted the strike zone is. I mean, it's the perfect storm, you know?
That's where I go, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that 100%. I think is kind of playing into it more. I mean, I get exit velocity and you know, launch angles and things like that. I get it, but yeah, I think you combined all of that together and I don't know. And I don't know if it's not just an unintended consequence that they're happy about, because you
well,
know,
that's the other thing.
Chicks dig the long ball. so
ratings. Yeah,
right. So exactly. That's it. I mean, offense is what drives that game when it comes to viewership. So I doubt any of these leagues are going to be, quick to make any changes here.
Yeah, I would just say this on the strike zone. That's definitely a factor in the enhanced offense. But when a guy barrels it, a guy barrels it.
Yeah.
Oh, and guys that were barreling it years ago were not hitting it this hard and this far. And you can't say, well, that's because of the weight room. The guys have been lifting weights and being bigger and stronger for a while. And it's not just the big guys that are getting ridiculous exit velo. I do think there's something to the bat and the ball. I really do. And I mean, one prominent SEC pitching coach told me this a couple of years ago. He's like, there's no question. It's going on, and either they fix it or we as pitching coaches are really put in a bad spot. And by the way, this is not sour grapes. This particular pitching coach is one of the best in the country and typically has a very, very good staff ERA. So it's not that. It's just they know what they see and they know what they hear and they can read the data. And there's clearly something different right now in the college game than there was a few years ago.
Yeah, I think the strike zone is in my opinion, the biggest problem. And I'll tell you why. And And like Cam says here, and I don't disagree with you. They want butts in seats. What puts butts in seats is winning baseball games. And honestly, if you're South Carolina or Ole Miss or Auburn or Alabama or UC Irvine or whoever you are, if you win every game 2-1 or if you win every game 12-11, it doesn't matter. As long as you're winning, people are going to show up and watch you play. But the strike zone is flat out terrible. And it gets exposed on nights like what happened on Friday night in Columbia. It was an old school strike zone with an umpire who kind of, he was all over the place. He wasn't very good, to be honest with you.
It's in the box score.
He's been around. Mm-hmm. So there was a side of me that was happy to see a guy calling his own zone, which I'm fine with. I don't care if your zone is 3 inches off the plate. I don't care about that. As a catcher, I like it.
One game, for those who don't know, right?
And it was this way on both sides. I mean, obviously, if Hagan Smith is getting help, my God, you're not going to beat him, and they didn't. But hat tip to Carolina because they threw it almost as well. I mean, they walked a bunch of guys, and that's where the inconsistency came in, Mike. And it was a inning to inning. Like Hagan Smith was getting the low strike, and then Roman Kimball wasn't getting it. But then the next inning, Hagan wouldn't get the low strike, and then Carolina's guy would. So he was kind of all over the place. So I'm just make it consistent. I don't really care how big your zone is. As long as it's consistent, I'm cool with that, right? But what happens here is we have been so constrained by all of this information and all of this digital data and the TrackMan and all these things. So when you get an old school guy who doesn't give a damn, it's really, really glaring. Right. It's really glaring compared to what you're used to. So like South Carolina this year, for the large part, haven't gotten the bottom of the zone called against them. Like if you're framing it, I'm saying it's out of the zone, catcher's going down, rolling his thumb, bringing it into the strike zone, getting a good call. A lot of that hasn't been called. And then all of a sudden it is called, and it was called both ways the other night. It was just inconsistent on both sides. Well, King got thrown out of the game, you know, which I talked to him Saturday. I said, after game two, I said, they let you stay in this one, huh? He said, yeah. They let me stick around. I said, what did you say that started with the word you last night? He said, yeah, you know me well enough. Yeah. I pretty much told him he sucked. And I said, yeah, that's probably going to get you run. I'm not big on the fact that I don't think the bat stuff, like when they, I'd rather see this from a bat standpoint than what they did back in 2011. Remember how bad that was? You couldn't even get a ball in the yard.
I've said it. I mean, I called games where a ball didn't reach the warning track. So, you know, it's 54 outs and none of them made it to the warning track. That's not good. That was an overcorrection. I agree with everything you're saying on the strike zone. I do think I actually lean more toward the ball than I do the bat. Remember what they did to equal out when it reached that low point of 0.51 home runs a game. And Jack Leggett was actually one of the guys that lead this change. They went to the flat seam baseball, mm-hmm. which is more what we have in the pros. The college game had the elevated seam. So what does that do? That provides lag when the ball's in the air, and so it doesn't go as far. So we got the flat seam ball, and those travel farther, and therefore we had a more power was back in the game of baseball. But, I mean, you see this in the bigs every so often, too. Every now and then, the balls just are a little bit different, and they travel a little bit different. And I have no doubt that the balls are traveling differently than they were. Take your reference point how many years ago. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the strike zone is a strike zone, but when a guy barrels a ball, okay, regardless of the strike zone, it's going to travel a certain amount of distance when he barrels it. And no matter how bad the umpire is or how good the umpire is, guys are still going to barrel balls from time to time, unless you got a guy like Hagan Smith, and sometimes it's nearly impossible. That's why he's a first rounder. That's why he's a top 10 pick. Yeah. But when guys are barreling balls and they're clearly the exit velo is, again, 5 miles an hour sounds like a small number. It's not when it comes to exit velo. and the distance is not when it comes to that. So I just wonder when the next move. I know it's being discussed. I'm wondering when the next move comes to do something to address it directly.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I think that you've. I think the only thing, Mike, that you can really come back to that would eliminate a lot of this stuff, won't eliminate it all, won't eliminate ball, you know, how tightly wound the balls are and what type of leather they're using and those type of things that, that kind of contribute to quote-unquote juicing. But is if you just shifted the entire game to wood bats. But there, you got a financial problem when you do that because of the cost that comes with that at the collegiate level. There. And you're not there, so you can't do that. So like you've got to go to other things, and then you know I'll add this too. Like we talk about the data that comes with TrackMan and all those things. Think about the data that comes with the players. I mean, how much harder do these guys throw now? Well, that's not just that. Remember, when you throw harder, if you barrel it up, it's going to go further. And guys barrel balls up now because they can walk into these. Into these quote basically labs essentially, and they see a bunch of data that Mike Morgan never got to see when you were a baseball player. I never got to see. I mean, even talking to Smoke, who just retired a couple of years ago, just a couple of years ago in the big leagues, and they didn't have some of this stuff, right? And so you get an entirely new look, a scientific look at the game of baseball. And I think that when you do that, number one, you're making hitters better, especially good hitters. You're making good pitchers better. But then if you don't adjust how the game is called, either take that plate and go from 17 inches to like 19 inches, or at least allow umpires to call it off the plate and eliminate a lot of the TrackMan horse manure, then you're going to continue to see this unless you totally just flatten out the bats and totally flatten out the balls. And I'm not so sure that they need to go that route. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I'll just put a bow on it with one last thing. That the sweet spot that you're barreling balls on is bigger now with the bats. That's true. The other thing that seems to be a consensus, and that so obviously not only are you're getting more off a barreled ball, but you're also having more balls barreled because it's a bigger sweet spot. And, I mean, aluminum bats have always had a bigger sweet spot than wood, but now again we're getting closer and closer to what it looked like back in the late 90s. Which, as many of us would refer to as the gorilla ball era, the pitching is so much better now than it was then.
Yeah,
you know, we've got more Ben McDonald's than we had back then pitching in college. So often back then, when you had a first round arm, the money was too good. They're like, I'm not going to play college ball. I'm going pro, and that's what they did. Now you're seeing kids turn down seven figures and play 3 years of college. And then that seven figures and then some is there when they get out, and then they go quicker right through the minor league system, as you're going to see Paul Skeens do. He's probably going to get called up next month. Now, if Paul Skeens was drafted out of high school, he'd be stuck in A-ball for a couple of years, taking 12-hour bus rides. So that has really changed for the better, and college baseball fans have certainly been the benefactor of all of that. Hey, let me mention while we have a moment, which I know are precious on this program, mm-hmm. Ryan Brewer Fence, ryanbrewer.net, a variety of services ranging from fences and railings to columns. Their craftsmanship, experience, and service, second to none. Fences, columns, rails, Ryan Brewer Fence can handle it all with elite experience, quality, and efficiency. I don't know if Brew could, I don't know if he's a baseball player. I've seen him play basketball. We all know he can play football. And you should know, if you're in South Carolina, he can do the very best job for you when it comes to a fence with over 15 years of experience. Go to the website, check out some of the work they've done. Fantastic. And again, competitively priced, and they always hit their date. That's Ryan Brewer. RyanBrewer.net is the website.
I saw Brewer this weekend, as a matter of fact. He looks as strong and scary as he did back in 2000.
I'd still give it to him at goal line.
And he never ages. I'm like, dude, I don't get it. Yes.
Ohio genetics.
Ryan is one of the best. There's no doubt about it. Bird's question, if they lose the series, Kentucky and Tennessee, will they host a regional? Don't know. It depends. You know, they've got 9 wins right now in the league. If you lose both of those, but you win a game in each and you sweep Georgia and sweep Missouri, that gives you 17 wins. You're hosting with that. I can tell you that. So we don't know. We just don't know. They've got to win some series. There's no doubt. But just because they would lose to a top four Kentucky or a top four Tennessee, they have the third most wins in the country right now in quad one. So they're right in line to host. Still so much to be played for. Super is deaf out of the question. No, it's not. If you're a top eight national seed, you would get it. If you're not, you got to play it out and see what happens. So that's definitely not out of the question. Nothing's out of the question. It's still way too early for all that. All right. It's 1:36. Time to step aside. We've got some hoops and some football still to get to. Don't go anywhere. Inside the Gamecocks. We'll be right back.
The State Farm Personal Price Plan helps you create an affordable price just for you.
Contact local agent Gary Patterson for your personal price plan today.
Touchdown Brewer. Set up a screen, and it goes to Brewer. 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown Brewer, his second of the day. Pitches it to Brewer. Turns to Cody. Touchdown, number 3 of the afternoon.
Hey folks, it's Mike Morgan for Ryan Brewer Fence. That's right, you know the former Gamecock legend as a terrific college football player. Well, I know him as that too. I also know him as the guy that runs a great business, one of the best businesses in South Carolina. How do I know that? Well, for one, I'm actually a client of Ryan's. I had my home in Columbia done years ago, and his crew did an outstanding job, just as he does for everybody else. Whether you're in the market for a fence, railings, columns, or anything in between, their craftsmanship, their experience, and service second to none. Ryan Brewer Fence has over 15 years of experience with consultation and installation of residential and commercial fencing and railings. Rest assured, your job will be done with an unparalleled level of expertise, and it's done on time, and they do it right the first time. Again, you're not going to do any better than Ryan Brewer. Ryan Brewer Fence. The website is ryanbrewer.net. Set up an appointment today. Tell them Mike sent you.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
My company is Billy G's Carolina Barbecue. We are based in Columbia, South Carolina, and we have two lines of sauces and a spice rub. I mean, when people try our product, they know it's a gourmet product, and it can go on any type of food. It's not surprisingly delicious. It's expectedly delicious.
Oh, man. The building is on fire.
Emergencies and accidents happen. When you're in the middle of a fire or water event, all you want is for things to return to normal as soon as possible. Resto Pros of the Midlands is with you, guiding you through the process and working with you to get your home or office back in working order. They'll answer your questions, discuss procedures, and can act as your advocate when it comes to processing your insurance claim. RestoProsMidlandsSC.com. Open 24/7 when you need them. Quality that is guaranteed.
The The State Farm Personal Price Plan helps you create an affordable price just for you.
Contact local agent Gary Patterson for your personal price plan today.
What's up to the best fans in the country? This is Eli Jones, and you're tuned in to Inside the Gamecocks, the show. Go Cubs!
Yeah, no midweek this week for Carolina baseball. Welcome back. It is 140. Gamecock Traditions has got you covered. And remember, a portion of every single sale that has a Carolina logo on it, a portion of that is going to NIL with the Garnet Trust at the University of South Carolina. GamecockTraditions.com. If you're not in Lexington, or if you're not at the Village at Sand Hill, or if it's a Sunday or a Monday that you can get there and that's when they're closed, you know, they got to go through merchandising and all those things. Well, then you just go to GamecockTraditions.com and make it easy. Have it delivered right to your doorstep. All the national championship stuff, all the really, really neat. If you've never had a Carolina baseball hat, like a real one, they've got them. The camo ones are sweet as well, of course. And they've got the all new Yetis in there that can hold 20 ounces of Mike's bourbon or 30 ounces of Phil's beer or bourbon or vodka or whatever it's worth. So make sure you check out Gamecock Traditions, GamecockTraditions.com, Lexington and the Village at Sand Hill. And add another name to the list here. Carolina is continuing to kind of scour the transfer portal from a hoop standpoint. Maybe you've heard this before. Minnesota guard. Talon Cooper was the last one. Elijah Hawkins is the newest name to emerge from the Golden Gophers program that the Gamecocks have their eyes on. We'll see if anything comes out of it. There are other programs named, you know, like Kentucky, Tennessee, that are reaching out to the guard who, what a stat line, Mr. Basketball. 9.5 points per game, 7.5 assists per game this year for Minnesota. He's a 5'11 guard out of Washington, D.C., so certainly would be a little bit closer to home.
What's the latest on the Furman kid?
He has committed to Auburn.
Yeah, Auburn.
He did go to Auburn. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Bruce strikes again, man.
Yeah, he's headed over there to hang with Bruce and the gang on the plane.
There's a lot of programs that were hot on his tail, from what I understand.
Yeah, there were.
The SEC.
Yeah, it came down to Carolina and Auburn, and he decided to that was, you know, that's what he wanted to do. That was best for him. So, kind of moving forward.
Still need a point guard. Pringle? I don't know what Pringle's looking for. To me, that would be a quality addition.
He'd be
better than Josh Gray the moment he steps foot in Columbia and does more. Great experience on a team that just went to the Final Four. It wasn't like he was rotting on the bench during that run either. So I'm not sure where that stands. But there's still some players out there. But you got to get a point guard. There's no doubt about it. You have got
to. Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, this guy from Minnesota is certainly and Carolina's already, you know, reached out to him. So they're absolutely looking for a point guard. He would be a little bit shorter than Talon. Pringle, if you bring so Jordan Butler committed over the weekend, right? And if you go look at what he did at Missouri and 2 points, 2 boards, 11 minutes, let's kind of come back to earth on this a little bit. He's a 4-star prospect. He's a 7-foot guy, right? That South Carolina clearly wants to be able to use in the post. You mentioned Josh Gray. This cat is a better player than Josh Gray. Missouri, and I know I've lost my screen here, but just give me a second. I'm working on it. Missouri that wasn't really probably the best fit for Jordan Butler from a what they do type standpoint. So he got in the portal and he was looking at teams that would more kind of fit where he would fit their scheme. And as Lamont Paris pointed out to us on our show, a month ago, guys, you got to go sign kids in the portal who are looking for the same thing that you're looking for. Like, your needs need to fit each other. And it certainly seems like Jordan Butler, it kind of falls in line with that logic.
Yeah, he's solid. I mean, I had a number of his games last year. You know, there's room to grow. We just lost Jamie. Yeah. Josh Gray, for all his limitations, was a full-grown man who had been playing college basketball at a high level. I mean, the SEC at both LSU and Carolina for, 5 years? So, you know, Butler is not to that level physically yet. And at Missouri, Missouri had a lot of issues this year. And they weren't going to go to Jordan Butler to fix those.
No.
Again, I said this at the beginning of the year about Josh Gray. I said it about Mitchell Carter 15 years ago. There are some fans that still think basketball is won by 7-footers, and it's simply not. Now, if you've got the Klingon kid at UConn to go along with maybe the best coach in college basketball and an array of talent, and they all know how to play well, and you got a 7-footer who's bouncy and agile and all those – yeah, a 7-footer can certainly help you win a lot of games. But that's not the key to most basketball programs. And quite honestly, Jordan Butler is not going to lead this team. And that's not going to be the story of the portal. You need a guy to replace Gray, and you got one. And you hope in time he's a better factor than Josh Gray.
Yeah.
What's imperative now is to get a difference-making point guard. Have Murray Boyles really expand his game, have some of those role players like a Jacoby Wright, have all those guys get better and have some impact from your freshman coming in. And then whoever else is, do they have one scholarship or two left?
Two.
Okay. Yeah, so, two.
So they need a guard and they need Pringle.
The idea, right? If Santa's wish list here on April the 23rd, get an impact point guard in the portal and get a guy like Pringle, if not Pringle himself, no doubt.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, but think about, like, Phil, we have one more break, don't we?
Yes.
Okay. So we'll squeeze this in and we'll hit that. But think about the context in which we're having the conversation, Mike. Think about this for a second. They just finished the year in the top 25. They were an at-large bid to the tournament. They finished second in the league from a record standpoint. Like, generally, we're sitting here in April. Well, nobody's talking about basketball. You might be, but we're having this conversation in the context of, to continue that success, they need to fill the point guard spot, and they need to fill that, from the transfer portal, grab one more forward. Generally, had you graduated what they graduated, Talon and BJ, and then lost Michi and Josh Gray to the portal like they did, it would be the end of the world for Carolina basketball.
That's right. But and now here they are. Alabama's lost a ton in the portal. Kentucky just lost their entire roster. Mm-hmm. And I think Mark Pope, with who they get, they'll probably be back in the tournament next year. Arkansas lost its roster, but Cal is bringing all the people he recruited to Kentucky, to Fayetteville. And that's just, you can now just continually reload, reload, reload. There is no rebuild in college basketball. So you're absolutely right. They can wind up being, look, depending on who these next two scholarship players wind up being, they could be a better team next year. It's possible.
Sure. Absolutely.
You know, it just depends. There's meat left on the bone, as they like to say. There's not enough there right now to be the kind of team that's going to finish tied for second in the SEC.
Yeah.
They need to score with these next two players. And chat roll, I'm not saying Todd Butler is not going to be, yeah, 7-footers are nice, and yeah, you don't want to be undersized and have people bully ball you. So there's no question it's a welcome addition. But I don't want people to misconstrue that this is, because sometimes people see 7 feet, guys, and they just automatically think, oh, impact. I mean, you saw that done with Josh Gray for 3 friggin' years. Bigger is not always better. Watch the NBA. It's not a bunch of 7-footers. Mm-hmm. It's a bunch of 6'10 wiry big men that can pick and pop and shoot threes and can jump 40 inches off the ground and still protect the rim, even though they're not 7 feet. So people get so juiced when they see 7 feet and they automatically think that's better than the 6'9 athletic, uber talented, uber skilled guy. Give me the 6'9 guy over the 7-footer every day. In other words, give me Nick Pringle.
Yes. Give me somebody. It should be obvious too. I mean, who was the better post player for Carolina this year? Was Josh Gray better or was Colin Murray Boyles?
Perfectly said. And then he was 6'7. Now, he did get swallowed up, and this is why I didn't like the Oregon matchup to begin with, because Oregon had a legit 7-foot freak that Murray Boyles is like, okay, I got nothing here. I can't work with this. Now, eventually what Murray Boyles would do in that situation is bring him outside 20 feet, and now you're playing his game and not the 7-footers. But that's where Murray Boyles' game has to evolve. He's not there yet. But yeah, you don't have to have like a bunch of 7-footers. I mean, they had Tony Kitchings and Marius Petrovicius, Mitchell Carter.
Hey, I like Mitchell.
Yeah. He was a top 100 kid.
Yeah.
And he was awful. Just flat out couldn't play dead in a movie. Couldn't play dead in a movie.
Now, there are big athletic guys out there. Oregon's was definitely a prime example of that. But then, you know, I just, you're right, Mike. I mean, the game has evolved at all levels. It's all about, you know, the outside shot. It's interesting to see, like, the shooting maps after a game, or, you know, looking at an entire season's worth of, you know, the percentage of shots taken. It is completely different than the game when we grew up.
100%. 100%. And it's still a guards game, and you want big. Look, in a perfect world, you want multiple of everything, but that's not what you get. But there's very few 7-footers. I mean, that truly impact the game of college basketball. Mm-hmm. Like we're not in the 80s where Patrick Ewing is the biggest, baddest man in the land and Akeem Olajuwon. And it's just, it's different. Now, you had a weird situation with Purdue and a 7'4.5" guy who was built like the Great Wall of China.
Yeah. That's not normal.
That's not normal. Okay. And you know, while he did show up big, and put up numbers in the game against UConn. UConn had a 7-footer of their own, and they had more, just had better talent. Mm-hmm. But you look at the best teams year in, year out, they're not led by 7-footers. They're led by great guards, great wings, and that's what I'd like to see Carolina get more of.
Before we wrap this up on a football note, one quick baseball note I had to pass along here, as difficult as this stretch is for the Gamecocks. And of course it will continue to be difficult with Kentucky coming to town, Missouri, Georgia at Tennessee. Not quite as difficult as what the Florida Gators have left on their schedule. The four SEC series that remain after they, by the way, just took a trip to Vandy and lost both or two of three up there. They've got to go to Arkansas this weekend. Then Tennessee rolls in. Then Kentucky comes to town. And then they go to Georgia. Those four programs have a combined overall record this year of 128-30. Florida is very much in jeopardy of not making the NCAA tournament under Kevin O'Sullivan here in 2024, something I don't think anybody had on their bingo card as they were
ranked and LSU. Inside of the
Yeah, Florida and LSU, not in the postseason.
The two teams that played for the national championship last year.
Yes.
That's just
what? What?
Crazy stuff.
Maybe the two most talented overall teams in the league. It just goes to show you,
well,
it is something.
You know, you lose a Paul Skeens, who, as I mentioned, will be in the bigs in a couple weeks, and you lose the best pure hitter in college baseball.
Hey, is he still dating the gymnast from LSU, Olivia Dunn?
Hats off if he is, but I'm not sure.
He's a big leaguer now, man. You know,
but yeah, he is. Something tells me he's got quite a array of options, and he's in AA, I believe, already, and he could be a call up by the end of the year. So you don't lose two guys like that.
There will be two. That would be two, right? Two guys that played in the SEC last year that are in the big leagues in May. What?
Well, what I don't know if he's going to get called up in May, but yeah, he'll be called up by year's end.
Because Langford's just up.
I was going to say Langford.
You're right. So I'm thinking Langford. Absolutely. Langford's not just up; he's starting and hitting cleanup.
Yeah, he started with the club.
Yeah.
I've never seen that before. That's never happened.
Extremely rare. Extreme. Now you have a guy like, you know, Bob Horner, who did not play a lick of minor league ball at all, and before he got into the bigs. There used to be a trivia question, like the five guys that went straight to the bigs from either high school or a college, but didn't actually play at all in the minor leagues.
Yeah.
It's extremely rare. So, I mean, obviously Langford had a little bit of time after the World Series. He played a couple of months, got a few hacks in, and then boom, you're starting on opening day. And Skeens will be up, and what's his name? LSU hitter.
Dylan Cruz.
Yeah. He's one of the best pure hitters I've ever seen in college. He'll be up by year's end. So that's three.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's anybody else that's got a chance.
Yeah, Charlie Condon. He'll get drafted in June, and then he'll be up in July.
Maybe. And,
same thing with Caglione. He'll be up in July.
Those two, I wouldn't rule them out.
They can hit the big leagues right now. There's no question in my mind.
I wouldn't rule it out. Oh, by the way, Caglione can throw 99 mile an hour heat. That's pretty strong. By the way, that's something else that's strong. Taco Tuesday, D's Wings tonight, West Columbia, Carnita Tacos, Firecracker Shrimp Tacos. They sell them cheap on Tuesdays for lunch, for dinner, D's Wings. Say hello to Billy and the great staff. New location, which is outstanding. Can't think of a better place to enjoy a meal in Columbia, which happens to not be that far from One Founders Park. You're thinking of places to eat this weekend as well.
Mm. All right. Final thoughts on the from you, Mike. I gave mine earlier, and JT will give it tomorrow. And I know we touched on it a little bit earlier, but final thoughts on what you saw out of the South Carolina quarterback position in the spring game on Saturday.
Yeah, and I hope to be back with you tomorrow as well. The full Monty, the full boatload.
Fantastic.
Our schedule's been kind of mixed up without a show yesterday. Look, I read what I always read what JC writes and Tony Morrell. I think those guys do a great job on BigSpur.com. I think if you went in optimistic, you're still very optimistic. I think a key part was what he didn't do, which was make a lot of mistakes. His decision making. Now, that we all know, the decision making is going to be much more difficult with real bullets, if you will, when the regular season starts and you're not having a vanilla defense, you're not wearing a different colored non-contact jersey. But he showed you. We already know the athleticism. We already know he has a strong arm. I don't necessarily equate strong arm with arm talent, right? Like arm talent is the ability to be accurate and throw in tight windows. Strong arm is what Joe Milton had at Tennessee, and that's all he had. So I still want to see Lenoris over time, and I'm not going to have a strong opinion one way or another until September, but I know JC does, and I always value his opinion. He's very good at evaluating talent, always has been out of high school. I think the wide receivers are still concerning because you know how my brain works. Mm. I look at what Carolina has and I stack it up with the other 15 schools in this conference. And it ain't even close to top half when it comes to wide receiver play right now. No. Offensive line could only be better, and I think the defense top to bottom will be better. So there's a lot to be optimistic about, and like every other team, there's still concerns and things that have to work themselves out between now and September.
I think it's well said.
It in.
Good point, too, on the mistakes and turnovers factor from Lenore Sellers, although it was really a pretty basic and vanilla game plan. But and he didn't get hit with live bullets, as you said. So who knows, had one have popped out, but it didn't. And that's all we have to go by at this point in time. So we'll see him again sometime in August and see what it looks like. I'll say this. There's Lenore Sellers, and then there's a big old gap, and then there's the rest of them. Protect him at all costs.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I will say this, though, again, the way my brain works. Jamie, trust me when I tell you there's a lot of teams that are in that same boat, where if their number one quarterback goes down, they're up the creek without a paddle.
Well, the portal has created this divide in college football. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're not playing, you're transferring now, except for at Georgia. They apparently have a roster limit size of almost 300, so they can sign everybody. But I'm with you. I 100% agree with that. I you're seeing it everywhere because kids who aren't playing are leaving, and until they get contracts, there's nothing to do about it.
Tennessee, problem. If Brady Cook gets hurt at Missouri, problem.
I think the only school I can
hurt at Kentucky, problem.
Yeah, definitively, the only school I can say, they're totally fine, Texas.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Texas. Yeah. I Texas will be all right. And they got a lot around those quarterbacks to kind of, hey, you don't have to win this for us. Just don't screw it up.
Yeah.
They'll be all right. But most programs, I mean, heck, even Alabama, yeah, they got 4 or 5-star guys behind Jalen Milroe. They can't do what Jalen Milroe does. The game plan completely changes if you don't have a healthy Jalen Milroe.
Right.
And certainly the game plan would change if Carolina, if Jalen Milroe, if Lenore Sellers got hurt. I mean, when you think about it, 5-7 is 5-7. I get it. Nobody's happy with it. It could have been a lot worse if Spencer Rattler, with all the hits he took, and he took a lot, if he went down.
It could have been a total disaster had he declared last year and gone on to the NFL draft.
Yes, that too. That would also be bad. That would also be bad.
I think we'd be sitting here with half of our audience today. The other half would be at the bottom of Charleston Harbor. Who would have hopped off the Ravenel.
Very true.
Yeah, it would be something. My parting shot today is what is behind me there. That's
awesome.
It was a big day, man, for my kids this past Saturday.
Names?
We had our T-ball game at 8:30 Saturday morning, and we only had 8 players, so we scored 24 runs in 3 innings. In route to just, I mean, we pretty much humiliated those other guys. We sent a bunch of 5-year-olds home crying.
There you go.
And then hit the road for Columbia, and they got to go down thanks to Gamecock Baseball and the hospitality. And got to go down there and meet what might be some of their heroes one day. And
what are their names, Jamie? We're seeing their picture on
Hannah
YouTube.
And Riley.
Hannah and Riley.
Yeah.
How old?
5.
Precious.
So that was their first Carolina baseball experience, and then went over to the spring game. That was their second spring game.
Awesome.
And they never took a nap. They went from being up at 6:30 on Saturday morning to going to bed at 10:30. Never cried, never whined, never complained, and never napped. Amazing.
They have Jamie Bradford endurance, clearly.
Well, they didn't have a choice.
Which you display each and every day on this show for 3 grueling hours.
Yes.
Yeah, and doing 3 hours with JC sometimes feels like 6:30 a.m. until 10:30 at night.
I can't wait.
It's funny because the exact opposite can also be true with him, and that you realize you look up and we've been together now for 12 hours and it feels like it's only been, you know, like 4.
Really?
I can't wait. Yeah. I can't wait to see. All right. We need to do it. So I'm going to be here 11 o'clock sharp tomorrow. I wouldn't miss this for the world. 11 o'clock sharp. We come on. The first person in chat row that comes at JC with some negative takeaway on the spring game. On Lenoris, on the O-line, on the D, the first one, We're going to see just how chippy JC is in the first couple minutes of the show. I'm here for it. I got my popcorn ready. I'll be ready to go. I might not say two words. I'm just going to sit back and watch and be entertained.
I'll turn my mic off and I'll just let him go.
JC, this is Bill from Spartanburg. I look at Lenora Sellers. I just see a scrambler. He's not a passer. Oh, it's on. It's on.
I've got a I'm not going to say this. Phil, I'll talk to you. I'll talk. Actually, Mike, don't click off yet. I'll talk to you about this. Just don't click off. I got a question for y'all I want to ask you right after we get off the air here. So let's do it this way. For the Golden
Zone. Off the air, or are we going to
we'll save it.
Okay.
When the red light goes out.
How people get fired, you know.
Craig, for the tip at rent, by the way, I meant to say this earlier to John Edward. Look, man, we saw your comments. It's all good, bro. It's all good. It's all good.
It's all right.
It's all good, man.
Hey, the tip at rent? Your rant, Jamie?
No.
I heard it wasn't a rant. But it was for you, it was strong. Because you don't go after the college athlete, which I respect. But, you know, kind of said the kid was not really SEC pitching.
He wasn't. But he's certainly had some good swings since then, and that's baseball. That happens.
So what was JC's rant on Tippett?
You'll have to go back and watch it.
He's giving
it. It was defending Will Tippett.
Not on Tippett. Well, I figured that. Yeah. So somebody took a shot, and okay. That's nothing compared to the fury that awaits the first person that goes a trip to negative town on the spring game. Any player, any facet of it. I just have a feeling.
Well, we might be able to tee this up. And I got an idea.
It's not right.
He's on an airplane. He has no idea what we're cooking up.
He might go back and listen. I don't know. We love you, Jamie.
Thanks to Brad Crawford and Hail Yeah McGranahan and the Golden Tones and Mad Dog and his mustache and that weird little other thing that he's got underneath his lips.
It's my soul patch.
The soul patch, that's right. We also have Daniel Kelly coming up this week. He's still got Spencer Rattler as the first quarterback on his board. He'll join us on.
Are we going to keep having this guy?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, you have to.
No, it's all culminated into this week, Mike. We got to have him back.
He's on draft day.
He's on Thursday's show. Okay, if I'm not here on Thursday, would you please ask him, tell me what it is that you see in Spencer that every other scout, draft analyst, and person that covers it is missing? Because it's not like he's predicting Spencer Rattler to be late first round. That wouldn't be that controversial. He's basically saying, the other seven quarterbacks ranked ahead of them, no chance. It's Spencer Rattler's clearly a better prospect. Now, I can't find anyone else on planet Earth that feels that. So you're either going to be the smartest guy on planet Earth, or you're going to have to explain to me where did you come up with this? Because I've listened to him. He's very smart. I actually like him. He's very entertaining. But I haven't found this anywhere else on the planet. So why is it he believes I need more than like he's a five-star kid he showed some great moments. Tennessee, Clemson game. I need more. Why is he better than Caleb Williams? Why is he better than Jaden Daniels? Why is he better than Drake May? If you say he's better than JJ McCarthy, okay, I'll give you that. That's not a hot take. Yeah. It's not going to happen. JJ's going to be top 15, but still, I just want to know.
Well, I have asked him those questions before. I don't just let him talk. I've put his feet to the fire on it, and it's kind of a combo, not to speak for him, but we certainly, of course, will rehash all this on Thursday. But it's kind of a combo. He is not very big on the draft class or the guys in the draft class that are ahead of Rattler for a multitude of reasons, some of from his own scouting days that he's referenced, others from the pure standpoint of national media and how some of these guys have just propped them up because of hype, and he doesn't like that. And then, but also from a Rattler standpoint, one of the things he continuously goes to is, you know, this kid left Oklahoma and came to a program that was worse. He got his brains beat in and continued to show up and play with a pair of you-know-whats every day, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'll say this. I would love to agree with him because I hope that that ends up being true. But I'll say this. I'm a big, big hat tipper to somebody that's willing to say what they want to say and stand on that hill and defend it. And so,
and just so we're clear, he's not a Gamecock homer. This guy is from where? Like, oh, Chicago? No,
he's from New York.
From New York.
Yeah.
He knows he's on a Gamecock show, but I'm sure whatever publication he has, he's putting this out to the masses.
No. He did that. That's why we got him on. We didn't even know who the guy was.
Right.
We reached out to him after he had put all this out, and we're like, what's going on here?
I just want to confirm that this is his true, objective, uninfluential. He's not trying to sell a publication specifically to Gamecock fans.
That's right. Nope. Minnesota.
From Minnesota. Worked
with Parcells, worked with the Jets.
No, I mean, I heard him talking about his days as a scout. And like I said, I find him entertaining, insightful, knowledgeable. I'm just like, this is so far out of left field. He's not saying Spencer Rattler is going to be a success.
Yeah.
That's not a hot take. There's a lot of people I can find you that will tell you Spencer Rattler, who in actuality is not going to be anywhere near number one, is going to be probably in the range of 35 to say 65. I know that's a pretty wide gap, but I'm just playing it safe here. There's a lot of people that will say that Spencer Rattler is going to be a good player in the NFL. He's going to be a starter in the NFL. No one is telling you he is going to be more successful than Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, Bo Nix, et cetera, et cetera. This is the only guy on the planet saying this. So I'm just very curious, what was the secret sauce that he found?
You'll have to tune in at I don't know what time on Thursday.
I'll double check my messages. I think it's noon.
I hope he's right. I would love to see Spencer do well. I can't tell you how much that kid impressed me. And this is what your guy is probably saying. Can't tell you how much he impressed me with the way he handled the adversity last year. He could have easily thrown his offensive line under the bus. He could have blamed injuries. He could have blamed a number of things. He could have pouted on his way to the sideline after taking another sack because his line couldn't block. He could have gone to the media and said, peace out. This is ridiculous. I didn't come here to be put on the turf every other play. He didn't do any of that.
Nope.
He was now he did make seven figures for his effort. So let's not give him sainthood just yet. But I was very impressed. And if I'm a scout and I saw that and I'm like, I like those intangibles. I'm all in on that. I'm rooting for him. How you have him ahead of every one of those other quarterbacks, it's a little mysterious, but okay.
His top 32, which is stating his top 32 players using game film value as an NFL projection. It's kind of a different term than we've
game film value. So okay,
it's basically what's on film and how will that translate to the NFL?
Here's Spencer being put on his ass for the 17th time.
My point is his first round mock, like his first round board, not a prediction of the order they'll go in, is what he said. Using their game film value, basically everything that they did, all of their games, everything they did in those games on film, and using that as an NFL projection, his top five. I'm not kidding.
Tell me the five.
Spencer Rattler.
Okay.
Brock Bowers.
That's a no-brainer.
I mean, yeah, that's you.
Xavier Leggett. Jared Verse. And Clemson's Nate Wiggins. And then a left tackle from Penn State at number six, Olamia Fashanu.
Well, yeah, he's going to be the top. He's top 15. And Verse, most people tell you Dallas Turner of Alabama is ahead of Verse. But that's not even a hot take. I mean, I could buy Jared Verse. That's not. Yeah. And I think Leggett has got a chance to be an outstanding pro. I don't know if I put him ahead of Marvin Harrison. Roma Dunze. Like, yeah. Okay, that's a little bit of a reach. But hey, if he is right, not only should we keep having him on the show.
No, we're going with him to Vegas.
That's yeah, we're going with him to Vegas.
Yes, sir. Screw the show. I'm going to take my life savings in this bet. We're flying to Vegas. Yeah.
Can he take my 401k over? And just here it is. Here's the passcode. Just transfer into whatever you think is right. Because clearly he's got something that no one else sees.
Yeah.
And we're making him a star. This is like fourth time he's been on the show.
It's all right.
No, I like it. What's his name again?
Daniel Kelly.
Yeah, Daniel Kelly.
FirstRoundMock.com.
FirstRoundMock.com. Mm-hmm. Okay. Who's this? Do you have his next five?
Yeah, I do. Actually.
Who's six through ten?
It was the tackle
from Penn State.
Yeah, and then defensive tackle from Illinois, Jerzon Newton.
Oof. Okay, that's a little bit of a reach. Okay.
He's got Penix at eight. Penix. Mitchell from Texas at nine. And Latu.
Yeah, the Mitchell as in Adonai Mitchell?
Yeah, Adonai Mitchell.
At nine.
And then the corner from Iowa State, TJ Tampa. At 11, Talese Wuga, the right tackle from Oregon State at 12. Uh-huh. Byron Murphy from Texas at 13. Malik Nabers at 14. Braylon Trice, the edge from Washington, 15. Okay. Quinyon Mitchell, the corner from Toledo.
There's some people believe the Falcons will actually 16. Either take him at 8 or trade down to get him. Yeah,
I like him. Fountainu, the left tackle from Washington. These West Coast names kill me.
You're not big with the Polynesian community.
No. Tavondre Sweat, defensive tackle out of Texas at 18.
He beat Alabama almost by himself on defense, yeah.
Yeah. 6'4", 366. Wow.
Okay. I mean, there's some reaches there, but none bigger than the Rattler one.
Yeah. He's got Milton at 19.
Who?
Joe Milton.
At 19?
Yep.
He can't hit the broadside of a barn. What film is he watching? Joe Milton at 19. Okay, I take it back. The Spencer Rattler is not even a hot take compared to that one.
That's kind of funny.
That's a lukewarm take.
He's got Marvin at 26. He said, I'm not... And that's another thing that he had mentioned too, Phil. He's big on the pro days and the combines and stuff like that. Cause that's obviously he scouted those. And he mentioned that here with Harrison. He said, I'm not,
but he also
a fan
big
of
on tape. You can't watch Joe Milton's tape and think first round draft pick. I thought tape was big. Are we just going to burn the tape and go, well, he looked real good at the combine. He threw it 80 yards.
He's got Ladd McConkey in there at 31.
That's not a shocker at all. That could be exactly where Ladd McConkey goes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ladd McConkey, a 4.39 40 and crushed the cone drill. He's almost unguardable. Showed that again at the combine. So that's not a hot take.
Yeah. Harrison at 26, Adunze at 20.
I think Adunze, you want a hot take? Okay, now you'll think I'm crazy. I think Adunze could wind up better than Harrison.
That's my hot take.
Mike'sFirstRound.com.
Yeah.
Adunze over Harrison. Mike's lukewarm take firstround.com, Adunze over Harrison. Yeah, I said it.
Yeah. I could see that. I'm not a big Harrison guy.
Quantrell is loving this segment. Quantrell, I could do this all day. We could go over these picks tomorrow and I'll continue pointing out some of the insanity. And I like this guy. I'd buy him a beer if he came to my house.
I don't
give it to him free.
I don't know if there. I mean, there's really, I think, probably like every other year from a skill position standpoint, only a handful of quote unquote locks, I think, in the NFL. Brock Bowers would be one in my mind as far as somebody's going to go to the league. And you just know no matter what happens, he'll be fine. And then probably a couple of these receivers. But I'm with you. I think Adunze. I'm a big believer. I'm a big believer in Xavier Legette. I really am.
Oh, so am I. Absolutely. I think
wherever he goes, he's going to be a 1,000-yard guy.
And he's going to have the luxury, if he can get in that late first round as opposed to early second round, he will play on a really good team with a good quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, I called two of Pat Mahomes' games in college, and he was good. Get me wrong. But Pat Mahomes, if he goes to the Bears instead of playing for the best play caller in the history of NFL football, another hot take, mikeshottakes.com, with the Cheetah and Travis Kelce, Hall of Fame tight end, you don't think that helped him win 3 Super Bowls? If he went to the Bears, how many Super Bowls would he win? So you sometimes going a little bit later, all these picks are slotted anyway, right? It's not the days of Sam Bradford where you can get a 5-year half a gazillion dollar contract. They're all pretty much slotted. Agents don't have a lot of wiggle room on this first contract. Just get to a good team. This is for Spencer Rattler. Get to a good team. Show what you can do. And then you really make bank on the second contract. And that's what I would hope for Spencer Rattler. And that's what I would hope for Xavier Legette. It's not going in the top 10, which Spencer Rattler is not going to do.
No,
but he could go late second to a good team that might have a quarterback there that's not really good, or he's get up long in the tooth. And Spencer wins the job, shows what he can do, and then our guy, his name again,
Daniel Kelly
will be validated as the smartest draft analyst person in the history of Earth, and he was unearthed on the Power Hour of ITG.
Well, he's got a note here. Last year, 81% of his pre-draft first round board went in the first or the second round. It's not bad. It's not bad. 81% go in the first two rounds that you had projected to go in the first round, meaning if they slipped, if you're most of the guys you had, if they slipped out of the first round and went to the second round, it's not bad. So
yeah, no, we'll see. I'm having some fun with this. Obviously, he's a good guy. He's a good guest. He gives good insight. I think that one's a little crazy.
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah,
I'm not so sure that he wouldn't be right on it again this year. The funny thing is he doesn't even have Caleb Williams listed. He hates Caleb Williams, and he made that crystal clear on our show. He can't stand him. And I don't blame him, honestly. I don't like him as a prospect either.
No, I agree with him 100% on Caleb Williams.
I agree with what he says about what type of prospect he is, but he's still
That's all from the neck up. And I know what he's saying. He's not the only one, by the way, that are like, this guy.
Yeah.
You got to deal with some things.
Yeah.
But if you're the Bears, you can't not make that pick. With their history of bad quarterback play, and you got a guy that is the consensus number one overall, you could get away with taking Jaden Daniels. I don't think they're going to go there. I think it's Caleb Williams. This draft really begins at number 4.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's going to go Williams, Daniels, May. I think it'll probably be Harrison at 4, and then 5 on. I mean, I can tell you who. If we've said project who the top 32 picks are going to be, I can tell you who 27 of the top 32 are going to be if I don't have to worry about the order. It's really not that hard. But the draft really starts at pick 5. And then where do teams go? And where does J.J. McCarthy? I mean, there's some rumors they could trade up to 4 to get him. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
It just seems nuts trading up to get any one of these quarterbacks. It really does. I wouldn't. And I think, the media have painted Chicago into a corner in that if you don't take Williams and he blows up, you'll have to change the entire front office staff.
Let me give you that 2021 draft class again. Trevor Lawrence, number 1. Wilson, gone. Lance, gone. Fields, gone. Jones, gone. By gone, I mean traded. Yeah. / demoted / trying to prove they could even play in this league. Those were all high draft picks just 3 years ago, and only one of them is still on solid ground, and that's Trevor Lawrence. So you're not wrong to project that a couple of these guys are not going to, they're not going to hit. They're going to be misses. But if you're in need of a quarterback in the NFL, you can't win without one. You almost have to take the gamble, and so you do.
Yeah.
All right. We got way over. I apologize. Yeah, yeah. You got me fired up there, but that's fun. That was good stuff. I respect the outside the box thinking.
Poor Daniel.
Daniel, I love you, man. You know more about scouting players than I'll ever forget. He's been there in the trenches. I mean, I have friends that do this for a living too, so I know what that life is like. A lot of coffee,
easy.
Yeah. A lot of staying in cheap hotels, a lot of lonely nights on the road. All the respect in the world for guys that have made that as a profession. But
a lot of watching a lot of games. Without giving a crap who wins.
Yeah.
Or what happens. Let me see that arm slot again. Oh, God, screw it. I can't do that.
Joe Milton in the first round.
Value. Well, no. He doesn't have him in the first round. It's just where he's got him as far as his value. He's got him as the 19th most valuable player in that.
And where does that rank in his quarterback list? He's got Rattler 1.
Yeah, he's got Rattler, I think, 2nd.
No, because he's got
Penix.
Penix in there Penix. Before him.
Yes.
So he would take Joe Milton.
May very well be the number one value in the draft, not because he's going number one,
but
because you're going to get potentially a starting quarterback in the middle third round.
Now, that is very accurate.
Actually,
let's just say Spencer went third round and he winds up starting as a rookie, then you just got one of the biggest deals of the draft.
Yeah.
Now, 49ers would say, we got a bigger one in Brock Purdy in the 7th round.
Yeah.
And he's been to a Super Bowl. He played pretty well in it, too.
Yeah. Thanks to Debo, not Brock Purdy. Though.
Yeah, but I think there's about 5 quarterbacks in the league that you could have swapped out for Brock Purdy with those tools around him and that defense to get to where you got.
You might be right, Phil, but at the
end
of the day.
Not sliding Purdy. I mean, you know, hell, I mean, hey, you made it.
At the end of the day, he beat out the guys he needed to beat out.
Yep.
And he actually, I mean, he was a whisker away from winning the MVP of the season. Like I think he's proven himself pretty well. But you know, to your point, again, the supporting cast.
Yeah.
I want to see Spencer with a good supporting cast and a bad quarterback in place. And I'd love to see the kid shine.
Yeah.
But it won't be anywhere near the first round.
No. We'll find out who's right, Mike versus Daniel, coming up Thursday, 8 o'clock on ESPN.
You know I can't. I love the NFL draft. This is I have a weird passion for this thing. I've been following it since 91. Literally, I haven't missed a pick from 1991 on.
Yeah.
I just.
Big night.
So,
it's fun. I love it.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Ordered some cheese fries, get some bourbon, chicken wings.
I'd go to one just to boo at Roger Goodell.
Get in line for that one.
That's right.
How much do they pay those random people that are there in their Falcons jersey booing the commissioner every time? I mean, they got to make
some money. I don't know.
So it's so insane. Boo, you suck. Why does he suck?
I don't know, man. He just does, man. Yeah. I don't like authority, man.
I know.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You want to boo anybody, boo the commissioner of Major League Baseball. Because Rob Manfred DeMora.
Yeah, he deserves some booing as well.
Trust me, in Atlanta, he doesn't come around these parts.
Oh, yeah. He's the worst commissioner
down there.
There's never a worse commissioner than Rob Manfred. He's a moron. Guy's an idiot. Literally an idiot. And what Hunter Wendelstadt did yesterday to Aaron Boone, he should be all over that, and Hunter Wendelstadt should be suspended for a month before he gets to sit back behind home plate and call another game. That guy's an idiot, too. He's been calling games for 40 years. It's time to go. It's insane. Like, Major League Baseball eats itself alive with TV contracts and horrible leadership, but that'd take a 3-hour show to get through. We'll call my buddy Corey McCartney and let him tee off on it for a while. Corey's good.
We should call this extra 30 minutes of the show, Get Off My Lawn.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Get Off My Lawn.
Presented by Fairway Lawns.
My lawn.
Yeah. Yeah, because bad umpires have better job security than Supreme Court justices. We all
absolutely. Very Hunter Wendelstadt, everybody talks about Angel Hernandez. Hunter Wendelstadt has had the shortest fuse in baseball for 30 years. He throws Boone out of the game yesterday for what? I'm not even a Yankees fan. There's no reason that should have happened.
Like, I would tell you Angel Hernandez is
the worst balls and strikes umpire in the big leagues. Oh, my God. Yeah, I get that.
Just has tenure, like, you could get rid of the Supreme Court justices before you get rid of him.
It's done. Time is over. Get rid of them.
There's only one that might even be worse, and I remember whenever I did a game with Don Sutton, he would visibly be mad whenever he saw him behind home plate. Initials. He doesn't have a first name. He's got two initials. JB something or other. Bup up something or other.
Oh.
And he is brutal.
Yeah.
Just brutal. He could actually rival Angel Hernandez as the worst. And that's saying something.
Yeah, it is.
Look, man, you get fired when you aren't good at your job. All right. These guys aren't good at their job and they ain't being fired because of what? Why? If managers in Major League Baseball go 60 and 100, they get fired. If you can't call but 60% of the correct strikes, you should be fired. That's brutal. Wow. And Hunter Wendelstadt, I'm telling you, what Hunter Wendelstadt did yesterday is embarrassing to Major League Baseball.
Is he related to Harry Wendelstadt?
It's got to be. I don't know.
It's got to be the son, right?
This guy sucks.
I'm just curious.
He needs to be fired. Like, if I'm the Yankees, I'm sitting in the commissioner's office. I'm not leaving until he's suspended. We're not doing that. Because my guy gets suspended if he's thrown out of the game too many times, and Aaron Boone gets thrown out plenty, and he didn't do anything to get thrown out of the game. He was just standing there because of a fan. So this guy needs to be tossed. Get rid of him. He's terrible.
And why is the post office so damn unreliable and awful? I mean, really, with a single package? I think not.
Yeah.
That's my final hot take. And by the way,
hallelujah. Holy.
I've got stories to back it up. Where's the Tylenol? I forgot to do this last week. We will get back to tomorrow from opening tip, fast food hot takes.
Yeah.
Remember, we
teased it.
Yeah. And it might surprise you all what my least favorite fast food is.
Quantrell USPS is a sham. Look, they had a good run. Pony Express for decades. They delivered the mail. Now it's a voot show. It's an absolute voot show. You cannot rely on them for anything. If you want your valuable item lost, you send it USPS like every other government-run organization, whether it's Amtrak or it's an absolute crap show. Doesn't work. You got to spend the extra bucks and go to FedEx if you want it done right. Okay.
And while we're on, I'm tired of DoorDash delivering the wrong order to my house.
You don't use Uber Eats?
So you can't even use an independent contractor to deliver anything to you.
Last time.
That's where we are.
The last time it happened, poor manager at Jersey Mike's probably went home and hid in his closet for a month.
Oh, no.
I made that guy feel smaller than the roach that I stepped on the way into the house last night.
Hey, I bet it'll get better if you pay him an hourly wage and give him benefits.
Oh. Here we go. All right. We're getting out of here.
Yeah.
Or Mad Dog and that strange looking little mustache thing. The Golden Tones and I don't even remember now. It's been so long. I think it was Hale.
You're still Jamie.
And me and Brad Crawford.
Brad Crawford.
We'll see you tomorrow at 11 and then we'll go sometime between 2 and 3 right here on IZG.